It has changed somewhat over the years, but the essence has remained the same. Go west, young man. A chicken in every pot, a house of one's own, a college education. Be your own boss, free agent. We call it the American dream. And while it has been fueled by noble notions such as freedom and equality, it has always been at the heart about money. Getting it, keeping it, making more of it, never having enough of it. After all, money does bring a certain kind of freedom. Freedom to live where you like. Freedom from worrying about putting food on the table. Freedom to move from place to place. And riches do bring influence. The ability to shape and mold your surroundings to suit your needs. Enough influential wealth brings power. Power gives the illusion of control over communities and conditions, over people and their actions, over momentous events and tiny details. We like to think of being masters of our own destiny, beholden to no one, economically secure enough and comfortable enough to thumb our noses at the rest of the world. We are all familiar with some of the most recent and most crass expressions of the American dream. We remember that game show from a few years ago, Who Wants to Be a Millionaire? Remember the game show a few years ago that had the tagline, "You are the weakest link." Why? Because you failed to win the big money. And Survivor, where skills are honed and hardships endured, all for a long distance run for the money. So in today's text from Acts, it is easy to see the behavior of the slave girls' owners and rail at them for their selfishness, for their fixation on lost income at the expense of the girls' liberation from possession and oppression. But how many of us would have rejoiced at her return to health and wholeness when it meant draining money out of our own pockets? Do we rejoice when we pay a higher price for gasoline because it now has to undergo additional processing to reduce emissions when it is burned? Do we give thanks to the IRS for taking a larger chunk of our income to pay for social service programs, community health projects, educational improvements? Do we throw a party to celebrate that our decision to buy organic means we will pay 15% more for organic products? Probably not. The backlog of lawsuits clogging our court systems and keeping an astronomical number of attorneys happily employed suggests otherwise. We want our money. We want our money back. We want more money. Show me the money. The bottom line in the American dream is, in fact, a bottom line, reducing our hopes, energies, and life achievements to a dollar amount. A few years ago, Celera Genomics announced that it was the first to successfully assemble the complete human genome. And when it did, the company's stock did exactly what most people thought. It dropped. The market could care less about pure science and scientific discovery. It only wanted to know where the profit was going to come from. Not long-term profit, short-term profit. In the 1970s, it was designer jeans and VCRs. In the 80s, it was vacation homes, microwave ovens, personal computers. In the 90s, it was flip phones, SUVs, Palm Pilots. And what is it today? Smartphones, iPad, iPhones, wireless headsets. So we don't have to relate to others. Paul and Silas were slapped around and thrown into prison because they interfered with the economic flow of some first century businessmen. But rather than moan about their unjust incarceration or complain about their injuries, Paul and Silas stayed up late in prison to party. And at midnight, they were still awake, praying and singing hymns to God. Paul and Silas rejoiced because their dream had become a vision of the kingdom of God as preached by Jesus and brought into this world by Christ's presence among us. The kingdom of God does not celebrate prophets. It celebrates profits. The kingdom of God does not base its success on pieces of gold. It bases on the peace of Christ. The kingdom of God does not judge everyone and everything according to some economic value. It judges the world with justice and mercy. Jesus continually alluded to what the kingdom of God was like without ever pinning it down to one ideal or one expression. Jesus likens the kingdom of God to a mustard seed, and in the next breath he compares it to yeast. Certainly, neither of these examples sound very lucrative. Jesus never suggested that the kingdom of God was like a Lexus or a Lush stock portfolio. The kingdom of God and the American dream are as different as the pursuit of good life is from the pursuit of God. Jesus cautioned that the kingdom of God is not coming with things that can be observed. Larger houses, glitzy clothing, fancier toys do not indicate the presence of the kingdom. Rather, Jesus declared, "The kingdom of God is among you, in the spaces between people, in the closeness of the relationships that hold people together. There is found the kingdom." Jim Forrest tells the story of Daniel Wheeler, who was a Quaker engineer who had gone from Britain to Russia to take charge of draining swampland in the Okhta region south of St. Petersburg. And a group of peasants was sent to his house with an urgent message, knocked on the door, got no response, and went inside to look for the engineer. But first things first. Once inside, one's duty as an Orthodox Christian is to find the icon corner and say a few prayers. But it proved difficult. Nothing looked like an icon. The peasants knew things were different in other countries. What would a British icon look like? What impressed them most in the room was the mantelpiece clock. So they decided that this was the British icon. And so they crossed themselves, bowed before the clock, and recited their prayers. And so with all of this conversation we've been having, if one of those peasants were to come into your house, our house, my house, where would they kneel? What has the power in your life? In a world that squeezes out substitutes for God in success, possessions, titles. Is the icon in your house Jesus himself? Which is it? Will it be? What will it be? The American dream or the kingdom of God?